Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas. A fascinating interview coming up later on in the show with US Soccer President Cindy Parlow-Cohn, who talks about how she personally apologised to Megan Rapinoe after the decision was made yesterday to revoke the clause which was put in 2017 saying that players had to stand during the national anthem. As well as that, we'll be looking ahead to those two Coppa Italia semi-finals which are live on ESPN Plus over the next 48 hours. But we start in Spain, which today saw the return of football. Sevilla taking on Real Betis in the Seville derby. Sevilla winning comfortably in the end by 2-0. Means they're looking good, extending that lead over the chasing pack regarding the Champions League places as you welcome in Gab Marcotti and Ali Moreno to the show. Ali, wasn't exactly back with a bang, was it?
No, it wasn't, but we're back. And so I think that's the part that we ought to be excited about, that La Liga is indeed back. And in terms of the quality of the game, well, I think what you can say is that Sevilla is a far better team than Betis. They showed that today. They were always having an outlet down the left-hand side with Reguilón, down the right-hand side with Lucas Ocampo. And Betis didn't really have an answer and didn't really have a threat going forward. And so Sevilla just kind of built momentum into the game. You may consider it to be perhaps a controversial penalty kick called by Mateo Lajos on Marc Bartra. But in the end, whether that was controversial or not, I think the right team won this game. Sevilla was far better than Betis. And I think if you're going to talk about this game, it's impossible to speak about it without making a note and pointing out the fact that there was computer-generated somewhat crowd of some sort at the Sanchez-Pizjuan. And maybe that's something that La Liga is considering doing themselves after taking an example of whatever Bundesliga were doing and trying to create some sort of atmosphere out in the stadium. It was a little distracting at times, but again, we have to be flexible as to what our expectations are going to be from here on out in terms of what we see out in the stadium.
So from those 2 points, let's start with the first one, shall we, Gab? Was it a penalty for you?
Yeah, I thought it was a penalty. And as Ali said, I thought Sevilla were not just the better team. I just also thought they were the fitter team. You look at some of the performances like Guido Rodriguez and obviously Lucas Ocampos, who was running all over the place. I mean, the guy looked like a bull, like he was already fully match fit. And of course, he gave us one of the most delightful moments of magic, I thought, with a little flick to set up the other goal.
Yeah, it was a great assist, wasn't he? Of course, converted the controversial penalty. Ali, as a striker, obviously, you're going to say it's a pen. The striker did everything right for you going down the way that he did.
Well, I can tell you that that is a foul that would be given and somewhere around midfield, but usually it is not given inside the 18-yard box. So I was a little surprised that Mateo Lajos would have given it initially, but once he calls it a penalty, then it's an interpretation called by him. And so it's not a clear and obvious error, and so therefore that's why I understand VAR not overturning the call. Mateo Lajos obviously has seen a push or Bartra leaning on De Jong and clearly thinks that that's a foul. Again, that's one that you see out in the middle of midfield and you say, yeah, sure, foul. Inside the 18-yard box usually is judged differently. It shouldn't be, but it is judged differently. In this case, Mateo Lajos says, you know what? That's a foul in the middle of midfield. It's a foul inside the 18-yard box. It's a penalty kick.
Ali mentioned, meanwhile, the virtual crowd, Gab. Wasn't quite what I was expecting, is that it just kind of looked like different colored rose petals almost scattered in the seats. You couldn't see or identify particular features. Did it work for you?
You know, it kind of did. I mean, when the shot is on the pitch and you just kind of see it in the background, it kind of looks like a crowd. It looks like there are people there, which is what you want. I mean, unless you stop and start gazing at it, in which case you're not watching the match, in which case you're not a football fan. Obviously, there's some glitches with it because whenever it cut to a replay, I don't know exactly the tech behind it, but all of a sudden the crowd was gone. So that was kind of weird to look at. But I think for the flow of the game, those people who are disturbed by empty seats, I mean, I think it contributes to it, and I think it's something to build on.
Yeah, it seemed to work, and it's something that La Liga are going to continue to work with. They also, of course, pumped in the sound as well, which we've seen work in the Bundesliga as well. It'll be interesting to see how other leagues adapt to it. Boys, stay with us. Just a reminder, the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast dropped today. What are you at now, Gab? X, is it? Is it X on your team of the...
Yes, this week's edition of the Alphabet 11 brought to you by the letter X. And this is where the going really got tough. And well, you had to swat up on your Chinese and Albanian leagues.
Yeah, be sure to check that out over on the website. Big news breaking yesterday when US Soccer tweeted this. The US Soccer Board of Directors voted yesterday to repeal policy 604-1, which required our players to stand during the national anthem. Black lives matter. We can do more and we will. U.S. Soccer President Cindy Parlow-Cohn is with us now. Cindy, how much of the protests that we've seen over the last few weeks, how much did they lead to this decision?
Well, the protests definitely galvanized our thinking on the issue. In 2017, when we passed the policy, the board's discussion centered around the national anthem and the perceived disrespect for the flag, and we missed the point completely. It wasn't ever about the flag. It was and is about fighting against police brutality and the racial injustices in our society. And it's about seeing and believing and standing with our Black and minority communities to fight these injustices. Now, I understand people who feel that kneeling is being disrespectful to the flag, because that's where I was in 2017. And I know there's going to be backlash about this decision. You know, my dad served in Vietnam. One of my brothers served in Iraq. And so while I personally choose to continue to stand for the national anthem and use my voice in other ways, I feel that others have the right to kneel.
How much did you talk to players about this decision?
Yeah, I spoke to a number of players, both current and past players from our men's, women's, and Paralympic team. You know, I wanted to really understand their perspective and where they stood on the issues. I spoke to players on both sides of this issue, and I asked three of the players that were on both sides of the issues to come and speak to our board so I could present a balanced view from the players' perspective. One of those players who I spoke to was Megan Rapinoe, who was great. She was collaborative and willing to communicate to the board and share her perspective. And I personally apologize to her and for putting this policy into place.
You mentioned, of course, in the statement, we will do better. How?
We have a lot of work to do. We'll continue to engage our players. We'll continue to engage our staff and all the soccer stakeholders at all levels who are interested in helping us move forward with this. For example, bringing in our players to the board meeting. I think that was the first time our players had ever spoken directly to our board. I met with our employees via video to get their thoughts. So we've already started to lay the groundwork for governance that is more inclusive and seeks out an even broader and more diverse set of perspectives. But this is not about just short-term initiatives. This is about writing these ideals into our DNA. So that they inform every decision we make moving forward.
Before I let you go, Cindy, I want to talk to you about the ongoing negotiations between the Federation and the U.S. women's side. Where are we at the moment?
Yeah, the process is ongoing. The judge's summary judgment ruling doesn't change our approach at all. I want to resolve it. The Federation wants to resolve this issue as partners, as teammates with our players. We have worked together to make this team the best team in the world for the last three decades. And that relationship is more important than ever as the rest of the world is chasing us. So it is still my hope that we can resolve this before it goes to trial.
Cindy Parlow-Cohn, I know you're very, very busy. Thank you very much for your time. Much appreciated.
Thank you.
Well, let's welcome in, shall we? Shaka Hislop and Hercules Gomez to react to that interview. Shaka, what did you make of what you heard?
I have to say, I couldn't be more impressed. Listen, as somebody who is always on the other side of the perception in terms of kneeling during the anthem, it was refreshing to hear her admit that she got that wrong and the steps that, that U.S. soccer now taking to put this right. Let me say, Dan, this is what real leadership looks like. I don't think this could have happened under the previous two U.S. Soccer Federation presidents. This is what U.S. soccer has been screaming out for. And credit to her for taking the brave steps, for being as honest in her approach as she has been, in being as honest in her own mistakes as she has been, talking about writing the DNA of U.S. soccer and what it stands for. This is how it is done.
Huck?
I agree with Shaka. It's never too late to do the right thing. I came away very impressed with Cindy. The only thing that would have been more impressive, if not actually perfect, was instead of Cindy herself apologizing to Megan Rapinoe, having U.S. Soccer put out a statement where they apologized publicly to Megan Rapinoe. I think that would have sent out a very impressive message, but if what we want is change, it starts from the top. It starts with leadership. This is the first step into attacking a systemic issue, into attacking police brutality and racism towards our minorities in this country. It's a problem. And when you represent your country as a player, you want to know that you're fighting for all that is good in your country. And the right to protest, the right to kneel, if you will, with this national anthem is one of those rights.
Herc, as someone who's played for the U.S. men's national team, it is quite unique. Obviously, you've got quite the mix of players in there. And we talk about players as if they all have the same beliefs or the same political ideas. Obviously, they don't. Could this be an issue within the locker room?
I would like to think not, but let's be honest. Your national team should be a makeup of your country, and we see what's going on in this country. If it's a reflection of that, yes, the national team could be in trouble because you have ideologies, you have beliefs, you have different religions, you have different whatever it may be coming together. But I think we're all under the same understanding. The people who fight for our rights, whether it's in war, politics, or even on a national team level, you're all fighting for the same thing, your freedoms and liberties. And one of those freedoms and liberties is to choose, if you'd want to and like to protest in this manner. That should not be up for discussion. We aren't talking about whether racism is bad or whether we have systematic issues. I think we'd all say yes. We have those issues, and yes, racism is bad. It's your right to protest however you see fit. That's what being an American, that's what playing for your country is that Americanism, if you will. I'd like to say no, it won't be an issue, but your national team should be a direct reflection of the makeup of your country, and we see how that is going, so yes, it can be an issue.
Shaka?
Yeah, listen, of course it can be an issue, but I think what this does, it opens the dressing room up to have those conversations between people who maybe have different ideas around kneeling during the anthem. But it's never a good idea, dare I say illegal, to tell the protester how best to protest. That just goes against the grain of the First Amendment. But on the other side of that very coin, it was put to me, well, what do you say to someone who maybe doesn't want to wear a rainbow armband in solidarity with the LGBTQ community? Again, if they don't want to wear that armband, if it's not a part of the uniform, they totally have that right. And I support and stand by their right not to. I disagree with it because of my values, but I stand by that right. And again, that opens up the floor, the dressing room, for discussion. Dressing rooms are by their nature made up of any number of different groups, be they marginalized or otherwise. And it's a priceless breeding ground to have these discussions and have these discussions openly and honestly.
But could that happen, Herc? Could you imagine the team coming together and talking about it, as Shaka says? Or are we going to see a divide within the locker room? Maybe players ostracizing themselves from the group because of their beliefs?
Listen, players are human. They all have different values, different beliefs. But if we look at the makeup of this group, if we look at how young this current group is, I believe out of the 50 players that Greg Berhalter has called in, 45 are very young with no international experience at the, at least tournament level. You're talking about a very impressionable group. And I like what I've seen from this group is sort of, in terms of values, in terms of morals, in terms of beliefs, if you will. I don't think that will be an issue, but you never know. What I do love is, and you're seeing it at the highest of levels, you're seeing these players, whether it's the highest level that you can achieve in Michael Bradley, or maybe the brand new a level in a Zach Steffen, who are there expressing their values, they're expressing their beliefs, they're not afraid to speak up. I encourage the dialogue because it's the only way for these people to grow. And as a team, you're going to have tough discussions, you're going to have tough moments on the field and off. This is one of those moments. It could be a coming together for the better of everybody type of moment.
Meanwhile, the draw made today for the MLS's back tournament. Six groups signing off in the Eastern Conference. Six teams in Group A, Orlando, Miami, NYCFC, Philadelphia, Chicago, and Nashville. Group C, Toronto, Revs, Montreal, and DC United. In Group E, Atlanta, Cincinnati, the Red Bulls, and Columbus Crew. Meanwhile, in the Western Conference, Group B will be Seattle, Dallas, Vancouver, and San Jose. Group D, RSL, Sporting KC, Colorado, and Minnesota. And in Group F, LAFC, LA Galaxy, Houston, and Portland Timbers. It will be the top two that qualify from each group, and then four places remain for the best third place sides to make up a round of 16. Those teams in Group A, by the way, will just play three matches like the rest of the groups. Hercules Gomez, your reaction.
My reaction is, that's very impressive by you, Dan. You just named off all the teams and pretty much the tournament scenarios and how they will be done. I know a lot of analysts that have no idea what's going on right now. I was one of them. Thank you for explaining it. I'm excited. Finally, MLS is back. It's underway. I think immediately what catches my eye is how they plan to go about this in this tournament style, World Cup style, if you will. By the way, it still doesn't have a name. Surely it's going to be sponsored by somebody who's a lucky someone. We don't know yet. But this group, F, if you will, this group of death in my eyes, at least, if you look at it, I mean, you have LAFC with one of the most exciting players in Carlos Vela, who's the face of this league. You have Chicharito Hernandez and the Galaxy, their crosstown rivals. You have the Houston Dynamo, who are the Open Cup champions, who under Tab Ramos are very interesting. And then you have the Portland Timbers, who have been a thorn on the side of LAFC since their existence. A very interesting little dynamic and rivalry going on right there with LAFC and Portland. I'm very excited for this group. This is promises to have some fireworks this tournament, so I'm glad it's kicked off. I'm glad we know who's coming. I'm glad we know where it's going to be. I'm glad MLS is back.
Hercules Gomez, thank you very much. Just a reminder, a lot more content over on our YouTube channel. Be sure to subscribe to ESPN FC.
Is your money not sure what to do with itself right now? At Ally, they'll help it save for the future with their smart savings tools. Bucket your money for the things that matter most. Analyze your spending and save automatically. All on top of a competitive rate. For all things money, you deserve an Ally. Visit ally.com/savings for more info. Ally, do it right. Ally Bank, member FDIC.
Hello, this is your apartment. I need some favors from you. Your cat keeps rubbing against the kitchen island and I can't return the favor. Can you give her extra pets for me? After that, could you bundle your renters and car insurance with Geico? We could save money and it's easy to do online. And one last thing. Could you leave the TV on during the day? I need to catch up on my soaps.
Geico. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
Italian football then back with a bang tomorrow. Live on ESPN Plus, Juventus taking on AC Milan in the second leg of the Coppa Italia. Then 24 hours after that, it's Napoli against Inter, also live on ESPN Plus. Gab and Ali still with me. Gab, boom. Brilliant.
Yeah, we're back, baby. Who'd have thunk it, huh? Look, they want to get the Coppa Italia out of the way. They're going to get the postponed matches out of the way. That's going to be the first match day on the 20th. And it comes as an important time for Maurizio Sarri. It's a chance to advance to the final and obviously hopefully win his first piece of silverware in Italy, so some people will get off his back. For Milan, it's been a really, really bumpy ride, but, you know, they still hold their destiny in their own hands, and they'll be without Zlatan Ibrahimovic, which is obviously a big loss, without Theo Hernandez as well. But now we really see what Stefano Pioli can do.
What are you expecting, Ali, from a player's perspective? We've seen, haven't we, some take a couple of weeks to get things going. In this sort of situation, you really want to be hitting the ground running.
Yes, you do. And I think this actually plays into the hands of Juventus. And the reason I say that is because usually a semifinal of a Coppa Italia, as much as you want to get to the final, as much as you want to win the competition, Juventus, well, they would be trapped in terms of, okay, we're looking at the league. We're looking at Champions League. There's a bunch of games around this, and now we're going to have to prioritize and make a decision as to what is it that is most important for us. Well, in this case, there's nothing more important. This is it. This is the one game that you've been looking forward to. Your preparation goes into this. You have all your focus into this, and while you may have some concerns as to what the fitness of your players are going to be, well, Milan has those concerns as well. And so I think it really comes down to the execution on the day and the quality of players that you have available. I can see a game in which Milan is going to try to crowd the midfield, put a whole lot of numbers around the ball, make it difficult and frustrating for Juventus. And I don't think that's going to bother Juventus. I think they're going to expect that sort of matchup. And in the end, it's going to be all about the quality of execution in the final third. And when you look at the players available for both teams, there's no question that Juventus should be the favorites going into this match.
Gab, normally, obviously, I'll say, what in particular are you looking forward to from this game? But the fact that it's a game is the big thing, isn't it?
No question about it. I mean, just seeing football back in Serie A, obviously, or in Italy anyway, obviously the first country to shut down because of the pandemic, that gives everybody a boost. I agree with Ali. Obviously, the Juventus are favorites. What I would say, though, is we're really in uncharted waters. We don't quite know how teams are going to react, obviously, to the absence of fans. And I wonder if the whole fitness side of things is going to play a part. In other words, you know, players who are bigger, stronger, heavier sometimes take a longer time to get fully match fit. And I wonder if maybe as a result of that, Milan may have a small edge in that department. Whether it's going to be enough to overcome Juve, I agree with Ali. I think it's going to be tough.
Meanwhile, 24 hours after that, Napoli against Inter, Gab.
Yeah, now Napoli thought, whoa, here we are. You know, we won away at the San Siro. We're gonna have our crowd behind us. In fact, that's not gonna be the case. I think what's changed about Napoli compared to when they last played is that the club is now a little more stable. A lot more of the question marks that were there after Gattuso took over, after the whole business with the contracts and the uncertainty. I think they're just more used to the situation now. They're a bit more of a unit. Inter have taken advantage of the situation to try to get more of their players fit. Obviously, there's the Lautaro business in the background. I think Inter are a better side, and I think they can get a result. But remember, they got to go there, and they have to win. And I think that's going to be a tall order. So in terms of who's going to advance, I would still lean towards Napoli.
It's tricky, isn't it, Ali, to get any sort of prediction because it is a bit of a lottery because, as Gab says, you don't really know what's been going on over the last couple of months.
And if we've learned anything from watching the Bundesliga, we also notice now that really home field advantage is not really quite so. And while I think it would have been difficult for Inter to go into Napoli and win this match had the stadium been packed and had the atmosphere been what we would have expected it to have been, well, now I think that has changed. As for what happens on the field, it's also going to be critically important, not only for what happens in the second leg of Coppa Italia, but for what happens also for Inter as they close out the season and their aspirations as to what this year should be in Serie A, what they do with Christian Eriksen and how does Antonio Conte fit Christian Eriksen into the whole mix, into the puzzle. Is he the guy that is going to be the difference maker with his ability to find passes in that final third, but he's going to have the freedom to be able to float around in and out of spaces, or is he going to be asked to do a defensive job as well? I think solving what Christian Eriksen is to Inter will determine a whole lot as to what this team becomes in the next couple of months.
Meanwhile, returning to that Juventus game, we'll of course see Cristiano Ronaldo, who on this day 11 years ago was presented as a Real Madrid player. You take a look at his stats and it's phenomenal. 450 goals in 438 matches. Won the Champions League four times, La Liga twice, and the Ballon d'Or four times during his tenure at Real Madrid. Gab, I was there. I was at the Bernabeu that day that he was presented. Tens of thousands of fans gathered in the Spanish capital to welcome him. This was a real moment, and it was a moment that Real Madrid had been waiting for quite a long time, because their pursuit for Cristiano Ronaldo wasn't necessarily a simple one.
No, it was far from straightforward, and if you remember, you know, they had the deal in place the summer before, until Sir Alex Ferguson stepped in and said, guys, we will sell him, but please let us keep him another year, and Cristiano agreed. You know, clearly a transformational player for Real Madrid, and, you know, when you look back, you might conclude that, you know, those two, the fact that they only won two league titles in those 9 years, you know, despite having Cristiano on board, I think it also says a lot about, you know, the guys across the country in Barcelona and what a tremendous rivalry it was. Well, it still is between the clubs, but specifically the Cristiano-Messi rivalry. And really how, you know, in the end, even Cristiano's departure, to me, leaves a sense that I don't think Real Madrid fans in any way can begrudge the way he left. And I think there's still a tremendous respect there. And, you know, it doesn't always happen that when you've got a guy like that who can go and leave a club without really any hard feelings towards the fan base.
What's interesting, Ali, when you look at all the big names that have played for Real Madrid over the years, the fact that we're discussing whether or not he is the greatest ever Real Madrid player just shows the impact that he had. Alfredo Di Stefano was very much on that pedestal, but you look at these stats and you look what he achieved, it is a proper discussion, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And it's very much a discussion. And you can make all sorts of different arguments for Cristiano Ronaldo. And I can just tell you, the fact that Cristiano Ronaldo goes to Real Madrid really changed the landscape of soccer worldwide and the perception of La Liga worldwide and the perception of Real Madrid and Barcelona, because now it wasn't just so much about Real Madrid and Barcelona. Now we walked into the Messi-Ronaldo conversation, which seems to be the only comparison worth talking about. Now, that comparison doesn't really happen if Cristiano is still at Manchester United and Messi's in Barcelona, but the fact that they were in La Liga and every weekend, I can imagine and I can picture paying attention, both Messi and Ronaldo, to each other and what each other were doing and pushing each other even from afar, even from a distance, and saying, yeah, okay, he scored a hat-trick, I scored a hat-trick. I scored a couple of goals, he scored a couple of goals. They both elevated their game, and the presence of both of them at the same time, at their peak, at their very best, in the prime of their career, I think improved the experience for everybody, for us watching, for the players out on the field, for the people out in the stadium. And it made Cristiano better. It made Messi better. And I can tell you also that I have a feeling that it's not only Real Madrid fans that miss Cristiano Ronaldo. I think Lionel Messi also misses Cristiano Ronaldo and his presence in La Liga, because I think that rivalry, while we consider it to be, all right, these are the best players of their generation, I also think that Messi looks at it as, you know what? Chasing that guy down made me better, and chasing me down made that guy better as well.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. Just a reminder, ESPN FC back on your screens tomorrow. We'll be looking back at both, one of those Coppa Italia matches. It's been a good week, hasn't it? If you're a Chelsea fan, of course, it looks like Timo Werner will be heading to Stamford Bridge. And that, coupled with that big signing of Hakim Ziyech, will join for the start of the next season as well. A lot of positive buzz around Chelsea and suggestions maybe they're not even done yet. Gab Marcotti still with us. Steve Nicol joins the show as well. Gab, what happened here? Because obviously with that transfer ban, they were pushing youth, but that still seemed to be the rhetoric, the narrative coming out of Chelsea despite the lifting of that ban. That seems to have changed over the last couple of weeks.
No, I mean, look, they had little choice but to go and dip into their many youth team products. Jody Morris, who's Frank Lampard's assistant, obviously former youth team coach, knows these guys really, really well. I think it's more than 10 youth team products who appeared for them this season. And I think a lot of people got a chance to show what they could do. I think a lot of these guys will continue to be a part of it. But equally, you know, it's one thing to be a very, very promising youngster on a successful youth team and to play to a certain level. And I think it's another one to go and be a regular on a team that goes and challenges for the Champions League and the Premier League. And so I don't think everybody's going to make the grade necessarily at Chelsea. But for the time being, all these kids are certainly being kept around. And, you know, if anything, you can look at Ziyech as competition for Mason Mount, perhaps. You can look at Timo Werner as an alternative to Abraham or to Hudson-Odoi. But you know, at some point, you know, they obviously have to continue and upgrade.
That's the thing now, isn't it, Stevie, for Frank Lampard, to try and get that balance right, to try and continue to improve these youngsters. But overall, it's about winning, isn't it?
Well, I think he's reached the stage now, particularly with the purse strings being opened, that I'm sure the club are more than happy that they're sat in the top four. That would have been a dream for them when Frank took over, considering they weren't probably quite sure what to expect. So now Frank's past the first stage of getting the trust of everybody, the players and the board and certainly the owner. And now that he's going to buy players, from now on, it's going to be about winning. Because when you spend money, as soon as you start spending money, you're expected to get results. And to get results at Chelsea means winning. So 100% now, he has to very quickly bed in the players that he's bringing in. But they still have to win as well.
Gab, how come Chelsea are so ahead of the game, it seems, at the moment?
Well, one thing that they've done really well over the years is obviously they've produced a lot of young players who they've sold or signed foreign players who they could go and get money for. And they've generally sold extremely well. And that is probably what's given them their flexibility in this time. In the case of Werner and Ziyech, they moved very, very early, obviously. We know Peter Cech, all along knew that Timo Werner, that Liverpool were in the driver's seat for Timo Werner, but he kept the conversation going. I mean, he went over most recently in February before the lockdown to talk to him, to try to convince him. If you're asking, you know, why is it that everybody's talking about this huge hit and the uncertainty that they took because of the pandemic? Well, you know, in Chelsea's case, you've got two very high earners like Willian and Pedro both going out of contract and not being re-signed. That frees up salary money. And I think they've been smart the way they've gone around things. You know, you think of a guy like Tammy Abraham, you need another center forward, but equally you don't want somebody who's going to make Abraham necessarily feel insecure. So what you do is you extend Olivier Giroud for just 1 year, so you have the alternative of the big man. You bring in Werner, who can obviously play center forward if needed, but can also play with Tammy Abraham. They've been very careful, I think, Lampard and Jody Morris have, in terms of nurturing the younger players. Another one is Billy Gilmore, for example, who's a guy Lampard absolutely adores. You've got Jorginho, who plays in his position. Jorginho may leave in the summer if the right offer comes, but equally they like the idea of having Jorginho around for another year and kind of managing the handover from Jorginho to somebody like Gilmore if he's ready. So the combination of those factors, plus the fact that, you know, they have an excess of players now, I think, in the middle of the park, some of whom, like Ross Barkley, are trying to sell to raise money, it gives them perhaps a level of flexibility that some other teams don't have right now.
Kai Havertz, Gab, we talked about him a couple of days ago. Where do we stand on his possible move to Chelsea?
I mean, I suppose anything's possible, but I would find it very difficult to see how you would now, having signed Ziyech, having Mason Mount there, having signed Werner, now you would add Kai Havertz as well. Now, it's true that people still haven't made up their mind about, you know, what position he's going to play when he grows up, in air quotes, obviously. You know, where do you fit a talent like this in there? But it seems to me that at attacking midfield and at centre forward, Chelsea are pretty well covered right now in terms of the types of players that they have. So I certainly don't see this being a priority, especially if Bayer Leverkusen are going to try to, you know, hold out.
Stevie, Chelsea supporters are excited. Can we start talking to them, talking about them as title contenders?
Listen, if I'm a Chelsea fan, I should be excited, because all this talk is about attack, attack, attack. You know, all the names we're mentioning are all about going forward. That would mean that not only would they have a great starting forward line and a great attacking midfield to go forward and win games, but they have choices. I mean, it's all great going forward. My worry is defensively. You know, Chelsea, what we've seen under Frank Lampard, at their best is when they're going forward. And because of having such a young squad and certainly a young strike force, when they're not quite at it, they've lost goals. So it's fantastic for Chelsea fans to see exciting players being signed, but I think Frank has to at some point start thinking about what he's going to do defensively. You know, I think Azpilicueta's still got some more miles left in him. If they sign Chilwell, he's a good defender. But they need a centre-back. I think, you know, Christensen and Zouma haven't done it. I initially liked Christensen, but he hasn't been consistently good. Rudiger is definitely their best centre-back, and he's good, but he's not world-class. I think they have to, at some stage, think about that. And you still got the problem with Kepa. You know, Frank clearly either was trying to make a statement with Kepa, or he just doesn't fancy him. So if they can sort that out, then obviously that's huge defensively. But Chelsea need to think about what happens when they're not quite at it going forward, because they've shown so far, when they're not at it, they lose goals.
Gentlemen, as always, thank you very much. Keep up to date with all the latest news regarding Transfer Talk. Go over to our website and click on, Transfer Talk.
Is your money not sure what to do with itself right now? At Ally, they'll help it save for the future with their smart savings tools. Bucket your money for the things that matter most. Analyze your spending and save automatically. All on top of a competitive rate. For all things money, you deserve an Ally. Visit ally.com/savings for more info. Ally, do it right. Ally Bank, member FDIC.
Napa Know How.
Father's Day knickknacks, that funny mug, ironic tie, or worse, IOU coupon books. It's time to get yourself something you want, Dad, like a Craftsman half-inch corded impact wrench for $99.99. It's the perfect gift to give to yourself. And while you're here, don't forget to shop all our great deals on Craftsman tools. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa Know How.
Napa Know How.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Offer ends 6/30/20.
The Battle of the Leagues is now down to the semi-final stages. You can catch up with everything you may have missed in our big simulation. Go over to the website, check out the article. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much to Herc and to Gab as well. For more from Shaka and Stevie, be sure to stay tuned as they're on Extra Time, which is next. Welcome into Extra Time. Thank you, as always, for your tweets. Stevie Nicol and Shaka Hislop with me. Both gentlemen actually having something in common this week, both celebrating their wedding anniversary. Beautiful pictures from Shaka on Instagram down the years, 25 years with his wife. Stevie, what did you do to celebrate yours?
I forgot. I'm sure you'll be shocked. I was standing in the kitchen just after lunchtime, and my wife was doing a poster with my grandson, and she was talking away and was just standing there, and she went, "Oh, Patrick," who's my grandson, she went, "Guess what day it is today?" And he's like, "What?" She went, it's your granddad and Didi's wedding anniversary." I was like, "What?" No idea.
Have you ever remembered it, Stevie?
Very
I feel this is an annual thing.
Aye. Well, I had no idea it was July the 9th. Actually, I should have done. Wait here, this one. What a day.
But just first off, Stevie, it's June the 9th, just for history. So just for next year, not July.
See what I mean? Well, there you go. So what chance have I got? What chance have I got?
All right, let's get on with it.
I thought I'd... All right.
No. Right. First tweet. How important is a good assistant manager, Stevie?
Huge. Absolutely huge. You need somebody sitting beside you who's basically not going to kiss your backside every time you say something. You know, you need somebody who has knowledge, who thinks along the same lines as you, who's loyal, but who's not afraid to give an opinion. And the key to the partnership, in my opinion, between the head coach and the assistant manager or assistant coach is that they can sit and have a dialogue, and then at the end of it, the head coach has the choice, and then everybody moves on, and you forget it, and that's it. So it's absolutely key. You know, that I've had times when Paul and I were together where I'm thinking of doing stuff, and I would turn to him and say, hey, what about we do this? And he'd go, no. And then he would explain why, and I'd say, fair enough. And he'd say, why don't we do this? And I would go, you know what, I like that. And then we would do it, and it would make a difference. So it's absolutely huge to have someone sat next to you that you trust, number one, but who's knowledgeable and who's not scared to give an opinion.
Sounds like the makings of a good marriage, Stevie. Now we just have to remember the anniversary.
Well, if it's to do with that stuff, I'm on the ball, but in and outside it, I'm all over the shop.
Stevie, have you ever received an offer to play in Italy's Serie A in the 80s or 90s? If not, would you have dreamt of playing there and testing yourself against the likes of Platini, Maradona, Hullet and Van Basten?
Well, the answer to that is no. And when I think about it, there's a good reason. I mean, I was playing with arguably the best team in Europe anyway. It would have been fantastic. I did get the chance to play against, you know, that Platini Juventus side with Boniak and everybody else. And we more than matched them. Got stitched up with some decisions. Of course, the game was not at Anfield. But, yeah, listen, it would have been great. But at the end of the day, I was playing with the best and the biggest club in the world, in my opinion, anyway. So why would I want to go anywhere else?
Shaka, when your time as a professional athlete was coming to an end, professional athlete, wow, was it difficult for you to accept or were you at peace with it? Did you already know what you wanted to do after playing soccer or did that realisation come later?
Well, to answer the last question first, I had no idea what I was going to do after, and this opportunity, Beauty ESPN, just kind of fell in my lap. And as much as, you know, coming to the end of my career the last few years, you recognize that, you know, it's coming to an end. You just can't do the things as you used to. But it's still a tough admission to make when that time does come, you know. And I'm sure I speak for a number of players, if not all. You find yourself hanging on to the most ridiculous of things in trying to keep your career going or feel that you can still do it. If you had a good training session or a good game, You would have the same exact breakfast that you did that morning. It just tried to feel that was the difference and that was the only thing that's wrong. And then eventually you just have to kind of admit to yourself that, listen, it's time to hang him up. And even though it's a kind of slow burn, slow downhill churn, I certainly found it tough just kind of having to make that call to FC Dallas as it was at the time and say, I can't do it anymore.
Stevie?
I was a little more fortunate than Shaq. I only had like a couple of weeks period where I was in that dilemma. I had finished at Sheffield Wednesday and then for a 2-week period I absolutely was thinking, well, not what am I going to do, because it was always going to be in football. It was what was I going to do until I get a job. Fortunately, I could still run around, and so I ended up playing non-league with Doncaster. Still got paid enough money to pay the bills, so I was a little more fortunate. And of course, the chance to go to America came along while I was at Doncaster, so I really didn't have too long to ponder. As I said, it was just that couple of weeks where I was thinking, right, how do I pay the bills until I actually get a job in football, whatever it was going to be, whether it was head coach, assistant, carrying the balls, whatever it might have been. But it's not a good place to be, and fortunately I didn't have too long in that spot.
Shaka, apart from the big three, Messi, Ronaldo, Neymar, are there any current players you'd pay to go and watch?
I'd certainly pay to go see Kylian Mbappe, especially if he's playing in that France team, which I think is incredibly talented. Outside of that, I'm not so sure that I'd pay because of one player. And listen, they've been, I make no secret of the fact that players like Zidane, I would have paid to see him play for anybody, against anybody, with anybody. I'm not sure that there are many in today's game that I can say the same for in that same vein.
During your playing day, Stevie, could you go and hang out in Manchester without being bothered and or recognised? Likewise, Shaka, could you do the same in Sunderland, Southampton?
No, absolutely, 100% no. Zero, nada,
No.
That was a no-go area.
But didn't you take your son to a game at
Old
Trafford once?
No-go. Yeah, and I got abused in the car park. I actually went with my wife to Manchester once to meet my agent, and on the way there, walking from the car to the office, I got abused on the way there. No, Manchester was an absolute no-go zone. It was a danger zone.
Shaka, what about you?
I remember the Newcastle players going to Sunderland once. One of our teammates, Steve Howie, he actually lived in Sunderland, and you know, we used to go, when we did go out, we'd go out to Newcastle all the time, and then he was like, come on, you're come on and you know, let's have a drink or two in my local, which we did, and it went downhill really quickly, and a few of the punters, you could see after they had a couple of drinks, it started to turn. And you kind of quickly realise that it's time to leave because it was going downhill quickly. So we all, you know, called our taxis, jumped in those and left as quickly as we could. And we never, ever went back into Sunderland again.
Who thought that was a good idea in the first place?
Well, it was Steve Howie. He lived in Sunderland.
Well, that doesn't... Surely someone went, maybe this is a great idea. Alcohol and Sunderland fans with a Newcastle team, well, this might not be a good mix.
Yeah, I know, but Steve had been begging us forever to come, and it's my local, and trust me, they all know me there, and they know I play for Newcastle, and there's never any bother. So he convinced everybody, and it went down early enough in the day. It just had to be like, you know, 3 o'clock in the afternoon or wherever it was, that we thought, okay, you could go and have one or two and, you know, not be bothered, and have a bite to eat and not be bothered. And if that was not the case
one or
at
two.
All.
Yeah. No classic.
Yeah, well, that's what, yeah, one or two and a bite to eat. Don't forget that, Steve. I threw that in there as well.
A bite to eat? No time for that.
Eating's cheating. Right. Seeing that today marks a decade, Shaka, since Africa hosted its first World Cup ever, you were there. What was the most memorable game? What stood out for you during the tournament?
The most memorable game was South Africa's opening game. Was it against Mexico City?
It was that memorable,
against
Shaka.
Mexico City. Against
well
Mexico.
Huh?
What was hardly memorable if you don't remember who they were playing?
No. I'll tell you what was memorable. I mean, it, being there.
I will never forget this.
Kind of feel,
who were they playing again?
As I was trying to say, Stephen, it was less about the opponent than it was about how the continent embraced it all.
And, oh yeah,
Benjani was there. I was hanging out with him, and people were lining in the streets all day just for in the build up to the game. People didn't bother watching it in their houses. They all kind of came together and watched it in communal TV screens. It was incredible to see the atmosphere through it all. And then they went behind, and then South Africa equalised, and I don't think I'd ever heard a noise like it anywhere. And we were stationed well outside the stadium in Nelson Mandela Square, and it was incredible. It was an incredible atmosphere.
Stevie, what are the biggest parts of defending you think that have changed from when you were playing, and are most of these changes good or bad?
I'll answer the question the way I think I see it. Almost nobody these days closes the ball down properly. And by that, I mean you get touch tight, where you can, as it says, touch tight, and then you're trying to take over control of the situation, which means you're trying to take him either inside where you're strong, or you try to take him wide where you think he can't beat you one-on-one. I mean, basic things. These things very rarely happen now. Very rarely happen. And I'm going to go back to Liverpool before you mentioned me doing it, Dan, and talk about Andy Robertson. He's perfect. If you watch Andy Robertson, when he defends, he gets tight. He's an old-fashioned defender that's jumped into the way the game's played now, and certainly the way Liverpool play, where he can defend properly, but he can go forward and attack properly as well. So, I mean, those two things are huge. You stop the cross, that's what the coaches will tell you. If you stop the cross, then they can't score.
Why do you have the clock that doesn't work? Is it sentimental?
It's a sentimental, yes. It's actually my wife's. So, yeah, that's why we keep it. I think she got it from her dad got it.
You can fix it, maybe.
So watch what you're saying.
No, I'm just saying. I every time we Sorry? Do it, it says it's 3:25. Always. I think you can fix it. It'd be a nice anniversary present.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, I'll get it fixed. I'll put an alarm on it so it goes off. I'll get it to go off once a year.
Yes!
12 on the 9th of June every year. How about that?
I don't think that clock could cope with that. There you go. Saka, how do you believe that you would fare playing as a sweeper keeper?
I think I'd be all right. If I played it all the way through. I used to come out and play on the park when I was playing in college. So I wasn't too bad with my feet in my earlier days. But then I got to England and you don't. You know, keepers aren't. You don't do it in practice. Keepers aren't expected to do it in games. Defenders don't even want a 10-yard pass. So you lose it. But I think if I'd been able to play it my entire career, yeah, I'd fancy myself.
Shaka.
Yeah.
Steve Grizovic used to play outfield as well in training with us. Not in college, with the pros. Ooh. And you wouldn't let him anywhere near it.
I'm very different from Steve.
If anybody
Grizovic.
Watching this doesn't know, Steve. Look up Steve Grizovic and see the size of him.
Well, he's a big boy.
Bruce Brovelar must have fancied himself as well, though, Stevie, surely.
Oh, Bruce. Oh, 100%. Bruce used to think he should play outfield as well. But he proved every time he tried it during the game that it didn't work. So we didn't have to say anything. He proved it for himself.
That is it, gentlemen. Thank you very much. We'll be back tomorrow for more Extra Time. Until then, goodbye.